69.5 FM, Resistance Radio for the Tri-State area.
Happy holidays. It's the perfect time to make a thoughtful donation to WBAI and have it doubled by your employer.
Doubled?
Yeah, doubled. With employee matching gifts, some employer will match your donation to a nonprofit organization. This is how you double your donation.
It's simple. Check with your HR department to make sure your employer has a workplace giving program. Just fill out the necessary forms and voila, you've given WBAI two holiday gifts.
Now your $500 donation becomes a $1,000 donation, and we get to make a greater radio. For details, visit wbai.org/matching.php.
Whether for the holiday season or for tax reasons, donate to Resistance Radio today. The fight continues in 2018.
Looking to start or add to your art collection? During the December mini drive, the online art auction will reopen for bidding, with reductions of minimum bids up to 30%. This is a great opportunity to pick up some wonderful artwork for your holiday giving. Minimum bids have been reduced and one-of-a-kind bargains abound. Guaranteed delivery to Manhattan and nearby areas before Christmas. Go to WBAI.org to proceed to the online auction site.
This is Baby K, host of the musical biography show The Sweet Spot, airing every third and fourth Thursday of the month at 10 p.m. Not only does WBAI bring you important news and information, it also provides some of the dopest music programming on the dial. Please support independent media and the true voice of the people by making a donation to WBAI. To make a donation, go to our website at give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Thank you for supporting listener-sponsored community radio. Time is truly wasted.
And you are listening to Community Radio here, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. The time is 8 o'clock. Time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly. Hang on, I hit the wrong button. No, somebody else hit the wrong button. Try it now.
Good evening.
All right, Rob T. Firefly here and Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
All right. We're all here. Actually, only three of us this week, different cast and crew. But we are still in the midst of our mini drive in December, so we urge people to give a call to 516-620-3602, pledge whatever you can afford. Become a WBAI buddy where you pledge a certain amount every month, a certain trifling amount, you know, like $5 or something, and that turns into more when you multiply it by 12, which is how many months we currently have in the year. We can also text us, 41444. With the letters WBAI, and fill in your information that way. You can go to our website, give2wbai.org. That's give, the number 2, wbai.org. And it helps support this place and the whole Pacifica network. You know, I did something interesting last few days using one of those devices that we have, you know, those smart devices, smart speakers, ones that are always eavesdropping on you and doing what you say.
You're talking to electronics.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, okay, I'll just say, Alexa, she's been here. You know, she's been to the studio. She's been a guest on the show. So I was talking with her, and I asked her to play not this Pacifica station, not WBAI, but I went to a different one. And you can do that. You can listen to other radio stations thanks to the internet. But with apps like TuneIn and things like that, it's kind of collected together in a very easy-to-manage way. So you can say to Alexa, play WPFW, for instance. And I was listening to WPFW for hours. They're the Washington, D.C. station of Pacifica. Then I listened to KPFT in Houston and heard all kinds of good music and talk from there, totally different style. And then I made my way west to KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA in Berkeley, and eventually back here at WBAI in New York. So we have five stations, five main stations, and they're all uniquely different. It's a very amazing network that's been around since 1949, longer than most networks, I have to say. And somehow it's survived. It survived all kinds of crises. And yes, we're in a crisis now with this whole Empire State Building business. But I think we'll get through it. I think we will. And I think if people listen more to the variety that is on this network, through different stations, I think they would realize how amazing, unique it is and why it has to be preserved. So with that in mind, I hope people call 516-620-3602 and simply say to the volunteer who picks up the phone, what can I get for pledging this amount of money, you know, whatever it is you can afford, and they will help you. They will send you a thank you gift for whatever it is that you you wish to donate. You can do the same thing online, give2wbai.org, and you'll see all kinds of things there as well. But the main reason to call or to go to the website or to text to 41444 is to save the radio station, keep the radio station going. We've been at this location on the dial since 1960, and you'd be hard-pressed to find any other radio station in New York City that has been around that long. Oh, yeah, you may say that, you know, a bunch of lunatics running the asylum here and always at each other's throats and all kinds of arguments and bickering go out over the air and in the studios. And we're talking about all kinds of things no one else talks about. But somehow that lasts. Somehow that is an organization that is not privy to all kinds of marketing research that says, well, you know what, we should go country this week, and we'll pull in the 18 to 24s, and we'll get more for our buck on that particular format. We've stuck to the premise of the Pacifica Foundation as it began, founded by Lou Hill in 1949, and we've kept going. That has been the bond that has strengthened us, and also, of course, the listeners who have called in. We were the first radio station, I believe, to even ask listeners to call in and pledge support. So having those two things, having that commitment and having the listener support, that is what keeps a radio station, and that is what keeps a network together for so long. And I see no reason for that to change. Yes, there are challenges ahead. There are things we have to focus on, things we have to fix and get past. We've been doing that since day one. I think we're in good shape.
Yes, indeed. In an age when people are willing to pay and subscribe to so many things, you're subscribing to your music service, you're subscribing to however many video delivery services, depending on who has what shows you want to watch or follow, and you know, subscribing to this, subscribing to that, and radio still remains strong. It still remains free. And it still remains something that you can get hold of with a very inexpensive piece of equipment that most people have access to. And this is the only thing that's keeping us available is what we're doing now is asking listeners like you to chip in and help us do what we do. If you think it's worth doing what we do, then show it by helping us out. Give to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602 or text the letters WBAI to the number 41444 and be part of what goes on around here. Help us keep doing what we do and do it strongly.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. Go ahead.
This is a special model. It's a different way of doing things. It allows people to express themselves, allows us to make things up. You get to make up how much you want to pledge. We get to program and do freeform radio the way we want to do that allows a show like this. So please, whatever you can, any amount, it all adds up. We're here for you so long as you can make a pledge when we're doing these fund drives. So it's a big deal, and we really, really appreciate your support.
You say a show like this, and that makes me think, you know, a show like this. What show is this? This is Off the Hook. It's been on the air in one form or another since 1988. And a show like this, it's the only one of its kind, I think, certainly in New York, probably in the country, where we talk about hacker issues for at least an hour each week. And we take phone calls and we sometimes experiment on the air and do all kinds of things that just can't be done in other places for one reason or another. Well, the biggest reason is having sponsors. If you have sponsors, you can't really do things that make companies upset or make them look foolish or call them out on how they might be ripping people off or various things like that. You can't get too political. You can't start criticizing those people you might have in your pocket. You know, a place like this, it's messy, but it's free speech, and that's what it's all about. And the hacker world fits into that very, very nicely, and that's why we've found a home here at WBAI. And hopefully our listeners feel the same way. We're going to be opening up phones a little later on so people can call in and share their feelings on this and other things as well. Actually, I'd like to read a letter because we do get mail from listeners. I want to urge people to write more letters to us because, you know, I think it reflects society in general where people just write less, or what they do write is confined to one or two lines and a bunch of links. And I'm sorry, but that is just, it doesn't bring us nearly as much joy as getting something that is paragraphs long. And you know what? It can even be paragraphs that are tearing us apart, saying why we're so terrible and how, you know, it is their most solemn wish that one day we just lose interest in the show and do something else instead. You know, things like that. At least we know you took the time to pen these words and attach them together. And, you know, it's good for you to write. It's good for you to feel like, yeah, I said that, you know, and it's there. It's something that is on the record. You said it. It's not a tweet, you know. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. oth@2600.com. I remember years ago we used to give out a snail mail address. I don't know what it is. I mean, I know the address on Atlantic Avenue here in Brooklyn, but I don't know if we'd ever get the mail, so I'm not encouraging people to do that. But I remember in the past, we used to read the snail mail address every week, and we would get mail there too. Well, now, email. Everyone has email, right? And I know lots of people, they shy away from email now. They only communicate through a particular company, or, you know, I only send Facebook mail. What is that anyway? How do you only communicate via someone else's platform? You know, email is somewhat independent. You can run your own email server. You can sign up for another company. There are all kinds of ways that you can use it on your own terms. But if you only communicate through Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatnot, you're playing by their rules. They can kick you off anytime they want. It's their machine. It's their business. It's their company. And you have to agree to that. But you know, running an email server of your own, that is the ultimate challenge, I think, for people on the net to do things themselves. Now, of course, we're going to be talking about net neutrality because that might be ending in a couple of days. We have to talk about last-minute strategies and all that. And that could adversely affect the very things we're talking about. So it's really vital that we have an understanding of it, and that we fight for what we believe in. But let me read this letter from a listener. who writes, "Hi there, I've been listening to the show for a few years now. In between also going through all the shows since 1988. Yeah, that's right. All the shows are online, except for the two that got stolen out of my car many years ago. And if you're the person that did that, you know, no questions asked, just return them and we'll put them online. But you can go to www.2600.com/offthehook, find all of our shows, and it's really quite a time capsule of how things have changed, how technology has changed. I mean, the things I'm talking about now, as far as people communicating in different ways, well, the way the phone network sounded alone is just simply staggering back in the 80s and 90s. And since we made lots of phone calls and did experiments on the air, you can hear that. And you can hear us talking about the various phone companies and the takeovers and technological changes. Anyway, this listener has been listening since 1988. He's almost caught up. I'm curious, though, why the dynamics and theme seem to have changed over the years in comparison to shows pre-2K, pre-2000. I don't think I've heard any mention of phones, cellular or payphones, in the last few years of listening. Well, I got to say, I don't have this person's name. Oh, no, Dave. I'm sorry, Dave. I have to say, Dave, well, we were just talking about phones right now. We do talk about phones quite a bit, actually, probably more than anyone else. But you're right. Things have changed. As we're mentioning right now, things change over the years. Technology changes, interests change. But I think you're listening to the only people right now that are fixated on phones so much that we'll keep talking about them no matter what. And even though all the payphones in the city are being yanked out, we're still going to talk about payphones. We're still going to talk about how they used to work if they're not there anymore, and what the capabilities are, and various other functions, landlines. You know, dial-up modems, all kinds of things like that. We talk about new technology and old technology.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to some of the very earliest Off the Hooks recently, and you actually introduced the show at one point as "Welcome to Off the Hook, the show about phones." And
Wow, I'd said that.
Yeah, that's a direct quote.
Wow.
And I love that because it was a show about phones at the time. It was before most people had computers in their house, but the concept is the same. Like, we talk now about computers and the internet, as those involved in the show did then, because that's the purpose it's serving. It's the connection of your average person to and from the outside world, and this method of communication that just opens so many doors and presents so many possibilities. And it's the same reason the early phone freaks were phone freaks, because they were messing with the biggest computer there was, which was the phone system. And so what we talk about here just evolves along that path and along the various ways in which we're using technology to find connections with one another and expand our own horizons and do things and learn things and so on.
Well, you know, it's the magic of the phone that got me into the whole thing in the first place, because, you know, through this device, you can communicate with the whole world. And this device was a massive computer, one massive system, the Bell system. And if you could figure out how to use that, you could do all kinds of things and impress all kinds of people and just learn so much. And I think that's what drove the phone freaks of the early days. And then that kind of transitioned nicely into the whole computer revolution. And the two really existed side by side for quite some time. And now, of course, it's changed quite a bit, but that feeling is still there. But also, you know, just to address that point, you know, we open the show every week with this sound. Now, you know what that sound is. Maybe some people don't know what that sound is. That is an off-hook tone. And what an off-hook tone is, that's what happens if you leave your phone off the hook, which is the name of the show. Hence that sound at the beginning. Maybe people don't know this. I know it's obvious to us. But, you know, if you somehow, for some reason, forgot to hang up your phone, you were talking to somebody and they hung up, eventually your phone would make that noise. It was so loud that you'd hear it from any part of your house and you'd say, "Where's the phone off the hook?" And you'd have to find it and hang it up. I remember before that tone, actually, though, my dial tone just made kind of a louder tone, but it wasn't a repeating tone like that. But I don't know what they do in other countries or what they did in other countries. I don't even know what they do here in the studio, because we have this phone over here, which has this weird tone. Okay, so what if I leave that off the hook? What happens? You know, is it ever going to change? See, this is the kind of thing we do on the air. We'll play a tone to see what happens to the tone. But we can talk while the tone is there.
I'm interested in what the tone has to say.
Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
Okay, but you know that noise—that's called a reorder. Some people call it a fast busy. That's not enough to get your attention from across the house. That gets your attention if you've got the phone next to your ear. But sometimes this tone changes to something else. In fact, I hear this tone kind of stumbling over itself. Listen carefully. Okay, well, now it's not doing it. Oh, okay, all right. Now that gets your attention. I'm not satisfied yet. I think it might turn into something else. I'll turn it down, though, so I don't drive people crazy. But
I'm waiting for it to start playing Kraftwerk or something.
Anyway, let's finish with Dave's letter here, because he had a very good point, I think. Understandably, times have changed. VoIP is here, that voice over IP, but it's still a fascinating topic and one that I wish would get discussed from time to time. Well, I hope you're happy tonight, Dave, because we're certainly discussing it. While I do hear the odd security breach brought up, why is there so little talk about security breaches? The last show, all that was discussed was Trump's Twitter account and whether he should have one. Well, you know, the whole Trump Twitter account business was pretty relevant to the things we talk about. It has to do with access to technology, freedom of speech, the way news is dispersed and how people can be manipulated.
And equality. Equality. I mean, like,
yeah.
how he's treated under the law versus other people.
Yeah, how other people would have been treated under similar circumstances. So it's, you know, we change topics from week to week. So that is something that certainly was relevant at the time. But we don't talk about that every week. We do talk about security breaches when they come up. We've got a few to talk about tonight, certainly. Anyway, if my vote as a Canadian would count, and I don't see why it wouldn't, I would say no to the question we were asking, whether Trump should have his Twitter account. And I think most people agreed with that, that he should not have did we have the final poll? We have our Twitter account, Hacker Radio Show. We had a poll, should Donald Trump lose his Twitter account because of the abuse that he was heaping onto it? Well, you're looking that up. Let me finish the letter. On the topic of payphones, I've spent a total of 3 weeks walking around New York City in the past year. I noticed 99% of the phones I saw were Titan. I might have seen a few Verizon, but mainly Titan payphones, even during my ventures into Queens and Brooklyn. Who is that company affiliated with? As far as I know, they're just Titan. I don't even know if they operate phones anymore.
I think they're an ad company mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they use those phones as real estate for that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's like a whole sub-industry that is something that really didn't depend on the phone network. So the phone network changes or becomes cost prohibitive. Well, they still have this place for eyeballs and people to, and that's valuable.
So it started out, you know, you had a payphone booth and then a payphone kiosk, and they'd put advertising there. And then as the phone was used less and less, they said, hey, you know, we can still use the advertising, so let's have a phone company that is simply about advertising, and maybe we'll throw in a phone or two, but it's certainly not going to be the priority. And there are no Verizon payphones anymore.
And
they're gone.
True, yeah. And we've seen many different instances of them being pulled out. I think there's maybe one working one. It's becoming like that there's only a couple left, and they're being replaced by these other Wi-Fi sort of modern or futuristic payphones.
The Link NYC, you mean?
Yeah, and we've discussed that a little bit, too.
There's one right here now. They put one in front of the station.
I'm not sure if it's activated yet. It wasn't the last time we were
It's like the scene from 2001 where the monolith suddenly appears, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and all the pro Magnum whatever people are throwing sticks and stones. Well, that's happening, too. People are throwing things at it, and it's causing all kinds of chaos and outbursts, but It will be activated if it's not activated yet, I think, when the moon gets full or something.
And this is like the sort of extension of what the telephone system began and emerged as, these new ways of using signal, like a Wi-Fi signal and a handset. It's akin to the features you would be offered through a payphone or through a household, but it's just changed form. And so as the conversation has changed about internet and telephones and long distance, it became more about wireless phones when those started. And this is also when the internet was emerging and people were starting to get broadband. So they were using their landlines in different ways, maybe with the DSL and all of those things now basically instruct the current environment. And these kiosks are a part of that process, which I think they're settled on. They're going to stay, I think. I don't think they're They're not going back. That's the future of payphones in New York.
Sad to say. But, you know, we still get more payphone photos sent to 2600 than anything else. People are still out there worldwide finding them and taking pictures. And I think that's something that, if nothing else, that's why payphones will stick around.
We have a lot of damaged ones.
We do, yeah. A lot of unmaintained ones, saying it nicely.
We'll share more on that later, I'm sure.
Rob, do you have some info on the poll we took?
I do. We posted on November 29th, should Twitter delete real Donald Trump's account? And there are 613 votes, 71% of which were yes, 29% said no.
I said no. I didn't say no there. I said no on the air because
I think most of us did on the air.
If he didn't have the Twitter account, then you know, we wouldn't be privy to all the craziness. Some of the craziness, but not all the craziness. And I think we need to be privy to all of it.
He might be more productive. I think is maybe the way people think that might go is that he'll do more things. He won't be spending as much time. But he'll be seething and upset.
No,
it just doesn't hold water.
Think about what you're saying there.
It doesn't sound right.
I cannot picture any universe where that guy is more productive.
He won't do more president stuff, you know, because he doesn't have to sit there and fumble around with the keypad and stuff.
No, I don't. I don't. I can't see it. But yeah. All right. Let's finish up with this letter, which is taking the majority of the hour. It seems on the okay. So we. I had the Titan thing. Okay, it's pretty much over, yeah. I'm also an active listener of Off the Wall, just after the fact. Great show. Thanks, Dave. Thank you for listening to both shows. Off the Wall is on Tuesday nights on the other radio station. We like to hear from our listeners. You can write to us, oth@2600.com, and put some sentences together, old school style, and we'll be happy to sometimes read it on the air, certainly all the time read it amongst ourselves.
You can also tweet us at Hacker Radio Show if you're a Twitter user. Though I do love an
email. If you must use Twitter, yeah, you can tweet directly to us, and I'm sure people are doing that right now.
I still love an email.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's great to...
You could make a whole email account just to write us a letter. I mean, there's a myriad of places that would let you do that.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick look at some of the things that are happening in the quote-unquote hacker world. An Australian airport had sensitive security details and building plans stolen after its computer systems were hacked. Perth Airport was hacked by Vietnamese man Le Duc Hoang Hai, who used the credentials of a third-party contractor to get access to the system in March of last year. Look, this story just came out, so don't look at me. I'm just finding out about it now. That's according to the West Australian, which apparently is a newspaper of some sort. Now, Hai has been jailed by the Vietnamese military court for 4 years for illegally accessing Perth Airport's corporate network in 2016. Okay, so here we have, this is a whole dragnet episode in 10 seconds here. You have the crime being detected, the perpetrator being caught, and now he has been sentenced. And end of story, 4 years for hacking into the Perth Airport system.
Somehow I feel like there's a but.
No, there's no but there. That is the story. Here's something else, too. The cyber criminal group believes to be operating out of Russian-speaking territories. I don't know why it's phrased that way. Russian-speaking territories, you mean like Russia? I don't know what that means. Has hit at least 20 banks and financial companies and stolen millions of U.S. dollars in the process. Details of these attacks were first made public in a report published recently by Russian cybersecurity firm Group IB. The company believes this is a new group, different from other advanced criminal organizations that have hit the financial sector in the past. Other media outlets are calling this hacker group the Money Takers. I got to tell you, if your organization is called Money Takers, you're not hackers. That's not what hacking is about. You might know how to hack, maybe. I kind of doubt it. But money taking, this goes against everything that that the hacker culture is all about. It says here researchers named this group Money Takers. So it's based on the name attackers gave to one of their hacking utilities. So it's really confusing now what Money Taker is. It was a utility, and then somebody used that utility to name the entire group, whatever. If you're stealing money, you're a thief and not a hacker.
And also, that's just not a very original name. I mean, what do you suppose came in second when they were trying to decide?
I don't know.
Maybe the Wet Bandits, I don't know.
We have all kinds of other stories of things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. We just get so much. A lot of people send us, you know, tips as well, which is good to have. We had the story of this happened in North Carolina, actually, about a week or so ago. The Mecklenburg government, they were paralyzed as their hacked computer files were held for ransom. Mecklenburg County, an unknown computer hacker struck them after a county employee unknowingly opened an email attachment that unleashed spyware and a worm into the county's computer system. County manager Dino DiOrio said on Tuesday night that the hacker essentially froze the county's electronic files, and that hacker was seeking $23,000 for an encryption key that would release the files. It's called ransomware. And the hacker's deadline was last Wednesday at 1 p.m. Now, from what I understand, they were going to pay this, and then they decided not to, which I think is the right thing, not to ever pay this for this kind of nonsense. And again, that's got nothing to do with hacking. And the deadline passed. I don't know what happened. No one's heard from Mecklenburg County in the last week. So Mecklenburg County, I'm sorry. No one's heard from them. So I don't know if they made it through there or if they've lost all control over everything. Our thoughts are with you. If anyone, listeners, are in Mecklenburg County, please let us know what's happening.
Yeah, ransomware is a known thing. It happens in the whole field of computer security. It's almost never a hacker that targets you. You download some piece of crap from somewhere, and it does its thing, which was set up long ago by someone shady using a plug-and-play tool that you can get everywhere. So, like, this isn't an act of hacking so much as an act of security failure. And, it doesn't deserve to paint a picture of just some individual hacker who's, you know, rubbing their hands in glee or something.
And there's so much, really. It would be very hard for us to cover absolutely every bit and every detail of it. I mean, I'm just looking. I get alerts for these things. There's stuff going on all the time. You can bet, you know, your major providers of operating systems like Apple or Microsoft, they're going to have updates constantly. They do theirs with much fanfare, even, especially if it's particularly nasty or related to a widespread, like, botnet attack. And so on. And especially with the holidays, there's been a lot of emphasis on everyone being careful. And you want to be really quite careful because of these things like ransomware, which are kind of nasty and not fun to deal with. And
I don't think there's ever been ransomware that wasn't nasty.
Yeah, I don't think you want to, like, expose yourself to that. And so you want to take precautions and look out for things to update.
Well, the number one precaution to take is make backups and keep the backups. Here's the thing, things people don't think about. You make a backup and you don't keep it next to the computer, okay? That way, if your office blows up or something, you don't lose everything. You keep that someplace else, different location, different city, if possible. And you keep the backup for periods of time. You keep a backup from a year ago. You keep a backup from 6 months ago. You keep one from a week ago, and you update it on a regular basis. That way, if anything ever happens, you might lose a couple of days, but you won't lose everything. And it's so simple. I mean, get a tape backup system or backup onto another hard drive, backup in the cloud if you're comfortable doing that. But the important thing is to do it.
Yeah, and update things. You know, maintain your equipment just like you would anything else. But my point is that just because maybe we didn't get to it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be alert and so on. So, yeah, it's hard for us to cover everything. And so if it is going on and we don't mention it, it's probably because we were talking about other things. And really, it's so comprehensive that, yeah, there's quite a bit of angles and threats out there. So you want to watch out.
The real reason is that we don't have enough time. Time is our enemy. We're only on for an hour a week. And, you know, hacking is the number one story everywhere, it seems. It has been for, like, years in one form or another. And we can only cover so much. Look, it's more than half an hour, and we haven't gotten to the net neutrality yet. And we can't get to the net neutrality until we get to this new feature. Yes, as promised, we came up with a theme for Hack of the Week, and now we have the theme for Hack of the Week. And that was the Hack of the Week, is finding the theme, because, it could have been. I mean, that's it took a lot of work and it took a lot of diligence, and that's what hacking is, right? I like that theme. Yeah, okay, all right. So last week, Kyle had the hack of the week without a theme, where he figured out how to fix our car using a device called the...
Finally, yeah. I used a vehicle interface that was specific to the vehicle, and it helped with the...
Yeah, and it got so much response from listeners, too. Listeners that are car hackers, I guess. Just a way you can take technology, take control of technology yourself. Well, I had a situation this week where I was trying to buy train tickets. Completely different scenario here. I was trying to buy train tickets online overseas because we'll be going to CCC this year and going other places as well. And, you know, I went through this whole big thing on the German website, which is a great website for figuring out when trains are running and possibly getting tickets, but not always. Sometimes it's just good for informational purposes. The site is bahn.de, bahn.de. And I found a really good price, you know, a really good rate. And I went through the entire thing of entering the day we were going, what kind of accommodation on the train we wanted, payment information. And I finally got to the point where I clicked, and that's when I got this error message that said your payment could not be processed. I tried it again. Same thing happened, you know, because that's what you have to do. You have to keep trying. Then I realized something must be wrong. I tried a different card, and I got the same message. But this time, I got an email right away from my card saying, hey, what are you trying to do? You're trying to charge something overseas. We don't like that. You know, you got to click here to say that's okay. And so that told me right there that, oh, there's a problem. Apparently, these overseas transactions are triggering alerts, and I need to figure out a way around that. So the best way around that, obviously, was to click OK so that I could bill to that particular agency afterwards. But then the problem became that the deal I had gotten had disappeared, was no longer there. Instead, twice, three times the price. That was the new rate for the train that I wanted to book. And so, you know, I guess what you're programmed to do is just accept your bad luck and, you know, not question the system. But that's not the hacking mentality. The hacking mentality is to keep trying all different possibilities. So I figured out that if you chose a different day on that website and then you clicked ahead one day, you didn't get the same results as if you clicked on the day that you wanted to go in the first place. You got different results. I don't know why, but you did. I kept trying that enough times where I would go backwards and forwards. And, you know, I literally spent 3 hours doing this. But eventually it worked. Eventually I hit some kind of combination where I got the rate that I had originally been quoted. I used the credit card, which had now been cleared for this kind of purchase, and I got that rate because I wouldn't accept the fact that I just had bad luck and I'd have to pay two or three times more now. And that, I think, is a lesson to be learned there, that you know, you always have the power to keep trying something. You know, keep pounding away until you get the result you want. That's what hacking is all about. It doesn't always work, and people will see you wasting a lot of time, and they won't understand why. And I think if you have all those things come together, that's when you realize, yeah, this is what hacking is all about. So that is this week's hack of the week. Rob, I hope you're thinking of something to do for next week. Hopefully, you know, between all the people who do this show, we are hacking things constantly, and we'll keep coming up with things. And if not, well, we'll turn to our listeners. Our tone is still going, by the way.
It's going to be comforting now.
Yeah. Well, it's always actually. I should probably hang up because we can't take phone calls, and we want to take phone calls later. If that line is busy, we won't be able to. Net neutrality. All right. So net neutrality coming up for that FCC vote in what, 2 days?
Yeah.
Not good. Not good at all. Today the librarians have something to say about this.
Oh, did they?
So you know it's getting real.
Oh, this will be cool. All right.
An open letter. Well, actually, it's the presidents of the New York, Brooklyn, and Queens public libraries. I don't know where the Bronx and Staten Island are, but these three have something to say. Now, on Thursday, the FCC is set to vote on a measure that would repeal net neutrality, transform the openness of the Internet, The effort to repeal the Obama-era initiative has been mired with protests, a deeply flawed commenting period, that's saying it very nicely, and calls to halt the vote even from within the commission. Calls to halt the vote even from within the commission. Now, a poll released just this week found that 83% of Americans do not approve of the move to kill net neutrality. Now, I can read that one again, too. A poll finds that 83% of Americans do not approve of the move to kill net neutrality. Yeah. Even Republican lawmakers are breaking from their party to call for legislation that keeps net neutrality in place. I'm going to read. I can't read everything twice, but it's all really, you know, good and inspiring. And, you know, you add Alabama to that and it's really, you know, it's a good week so far. But we have a big fight ahead of us. Now, Ajit Pai's FCC is expected, regardless, to move forward with the vote tomorrow. And that has almost everyone who uses the internet concerned. Now, this letter from Anthony Marks, president and CEO of the New York Public Library, Linda Johnson, president and CEO of the Brooklyn Public Library, and Dennis Walcott, president and CEO of the Queens Library, outlined how they feel the move to strip net neutrality could negatively impact the New York area public library systems. This is what they have to say. Since their inception, public libraries have fought to ensure that all people, regardless of their background or beliefs, have access to knowledge, education, and opportunity. That noble mission hasn't changed, even as technology has. In addition to books and other materials, public libraries in every community in our great country are providing access to the computer and the internet, technology training classes, tablets, laptops, and more, offering everyone the tools they need to improve their lives, strengthen their communities, and succeed. Libraries are at the foundation of the American dream. The recent proposal by the Federal Communications Commission to abandon current net neutrality rules stands in direct opposition to this vital work. The proposal essentially gives broadband providers financial incentive to govern the openness of the internet, paving the way for models in which consumers pay for priority access, and those who can't pay are limited to a slow lane. Without the current protections, the already yawning digital divide will be widened. We know in New York City, millions of families cannot afford broadband access at home. These families are in our branches, borrowing Wi-Fi hotspots, or using our public computers to do homework, pay bills, apply for jobs, or communicate with relatives. For these New Yorkers, the 216 library branches across the city are their only option for access to technology. For the FCC to place internet access, something that in today's world is a necessity, not a luxury, to place that even further out of reach is appalling. You don't want a librarian to think you're appalling, believe me. As strong advocates for and guardians of the right for people to seek and receive information from all points of view without restriction, New York City libraries cannot possibly support such a measure. For us, though, it's more than just principle. We, too, would potentially need to pay broadband providers extra so our content could be delivered on the same terms as commercial content providers. For public libraries, most of which are government agencies or nonprofits, this could be a serious burden as we deliver large amounts of video to our patrons, have users remotely accessing collections at home. We offer hundreds of expensive data sets to the public for free. As libraries will increasingly collect digital assets, these costs will increase. In other words, this proposal directly impacts the public's ability to access library collections and materials, the very tools that have helped even the playing field for so many in this country for centuries. To see who will be affected, simply walk into any New York City library branch, or if you're listening from a different part of the country, walk into your branch. See the students who literally cannot do their homework without our computers. See the parents and caregivers who are learning English and applying for jobs online to improve their circumstances. See the higher education students, independent researchers, and scholars who need our databases and online collections to further scholarship. Imagine how frustrated they will be, how demoralized, how when they find out they can no longer access what they need. Now, critics of net neutrality are quick to point out that it could stifle innovation. Why, for example, would a cable company invest in having the highest speed data network if it could not reap the financial rewards of selling premium access to that higher speed data? These critics say the new proposal values private investment and innovation over government intervention. Those are weak arguments. In reality, far more technology companies are financially incentivized to spur innovation around high speed internet than just the telecom and cable companies own the infrastructure. The consumer demand to deliver uninterrupted streaming of the hottest new Netflix show or multiplayer access to the latest PlayStation game will keep internet speeds humming with or without net neutrality. Wow. It's something. And, you know, I've noticed so many entities, so many people are uniting to fight this thing. I've seen a post today, for instance, from there's one from Google. Our values remain the same. The internet should be competitive and open. That's how it works today. That's how it has always worked. It's a level playing field where new entrants and established players can reach users on an equal footing. If internet access providers can block some services and cut special deals that prioritize some companies' content over others, that would threaten the innovation that makes the internet awesome. The internet was designed to empower people. To get online, you need to use an internet access provider. But once you're online, you decide what to do and where to go. Anyone, anywhere can share their opinions freely, and any entrepreneur, big or small, can build, launch, and innovate without having to get permission first. We believe that consumers should continue to enjoy open on-ramps to the internet. That means no internet access provider should block or degrade internet traffic, nor should they sell fast lanes that prioritize particular internet services over others. These rules should apply regardless of whether you're accessing the internet using a cable connection, a wireless service, or any other technology. We saw Mozilla has an amazing page up. If you go to advocacy.mozilla.org, you can actually make a phone call right now. Call your member of Congress. Urge them to stop Ajit Pai's plan. Last week, Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai revealed that anti-net neutrality proposal his agency is set to vote on December 14th. These rules are way, way, way worse than expected. If passed, this would eradicate crucial protections for free speech, competition, and innovation online. It would be legal for big cable companies to create fast lanes to throttle the speeds of competing websites or filter out social media posts they don't like. And this could mean that you pay more for less of the web. Now, at this stage of political gamesmanship, Congress holds a powerful sway over this issue. As constituent outrage grows, they can call on Pai to stall the vote on these awful rules, hold him accountable if he goes through with it. There's already been a groundswell of opposition, but we need to raise the volume even higher so that every elected official knows how toxic Pai's plan is. So there are so many places that you can go and take more action. We've named a few of them. I'm sure you can find more. I'm sure you can call your elected officials and add your voice to this growing chorus. It matters. It adds up. We've seen this time and time again. We saw it with what happened on Election Day. We saw it what happened yesterday in Alabama. We see it with people gathering together to raise their voices in opposition or in support of a common goal. And I think we have a very, very good chance of killing this.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed a couple others. There's been a lot of really good statements we could go on with. I was sent something by a student hacker friend before the show that was something they noticed on GitHub, which invariably they use for projects and their own development of electronics and code. And that link is it's github.com/net-neutrality. And there it says save net neutrality in the U.S. again. A free open internet is once again at stake. Now more than ever before, it's time to make a ruckus. Call your representative.
I saw this on Al Jazeera. I saw this good summary of what net neutrality is all about. Because, you know, it's kind of hard to explain to people. I think we've gotten the basic premise of it out. But, you know, it's a little difficult sometimes to get people to understand it. But net neutrality is a set of principles and rules that say internet service providers, known as ISPs, must treat all data fairly without blocking or throttling certain data streams. And this means that an ISP like Comcast can't slow down a streaming service like Netflix, nor can it block or slow down Fox News in favor of NBC, which is owned by Comcast. You see how it works. Open internet advocates fear an end to net neutrality will lead to censorship and increased cost for internet connectivity. And the FCC plans on voting on ending the policy for net neutrality tomorrow. So it's definitely an urgent issue right now and something that It doesn't matter where you come from politically. As was pointed out here, yeah, Fox News could be the ones to feel the pain of this, or just an alternative news site of whatever type. It's something that anyone that has value towards individual expression will feel the pain of.
And this is a battle that we've fought already so many times, as you mentioned, Kyle. We've dealt with SOPA and PIPA and so many repeated attempts by the powers that be to sneak net neutrality out from under us. And every time the internet has exploded, people have risen up and said, no, this is something we need. This is something that's important. And, you know, it seems to quell the threat until the next time the same damn thing comes up. And it gets really tiring. But it seems that the powers that be have figured out that all they have to do is make us tired, make us complacent, make us not care anymore whether it goes one way or another, and also to put a complete shill in charge of the FCC, who literally was laughing and doing stand-up comedy at an event regarding how against the structure of the fundamental internet he is.
Oh, that was painful.
It was terribly
painful.
That
was very painful.
And add to this all of the sort of the news, not newspeak, but like sort of revisionism and muddying of what it actually is, what it has been over the course of, as Rob said, the historical changes and attempts to go in this direction. Now with that leadership, we're getting it full on. There's no less importance on getting active and talking about this and making it very, very clear to your members. Be nice to them, but you know, make it clear, be adamant that your community, people are affected by this and we need this resource ever more in the future.
Our phone number for listeners to call in and speak on the air, 347-335-0818. We have a few minutes. We can take your calls. In today's New York Times, they noted that Reddit, Etsy, Kickstarter were among the sites warning that the proposal at the FCC to roll back net neutrality rules would fundamentally change the way the internet is experienced. Kickstarter cleared its entire home screen for a sparse white screen reading "Defend Net Neutrality" in large letters. And Reddit, the popular online message board, pushed in multiple ways on its site for keeping the rules, including a pop-up box on its home screen. But, you know, they also focused on some of the larger companies. And we've been mentioning Netflix. And it's obvious to me that Netflix may support net neutrality now, but they may become so big that it doesn't really matter to them because they can afford whatever is being charged. This is for the next Netflix. This is for the company that is basically rising up out of nothing and creating something brand new that needs to not be crippled by fees to get equal access. Now, it's interesting, too, focusing on Netflix here, according to the Times, they were once among the most vocal of net neutrality boosters. They're perhaps most conspicuous now in their relative silence. In recent months, the company's chief executive has said net neutrality is no longer the company's primary battle, partly because Netflix is now large enough that it can secure the deals it needs with internet access providers to ensure its service is delivered smoothly to consumers. So that's something to look out for.
Yeah, I mean they're down to like co-locating equipment, and they're very deeply integrated as far as their physical presence. To say nothing of these new sorts of business models that they might become appealing. They already have your monthly subscription. Now they can meddle with how you get the subscription, and insofar as whether it comes fast enough or whether it's, you know, reliable, and these kinds of things may become less important to them because they don't feel it. They're more detached.
Let me just give out the phone number one more time because I think a call fell off. 347-335-0818. Please call in and voice your opinion. 347-335-0818.
The common thread with Netflix, Google, Etsy, Kickstarter, all these companies, is that they all just started at one point as a little website on the net somewhere. They had the same fighting chance as everyone else to get their thing off the ground, to get their thing out there used and successful. And, you know, one of you listening out there might have the idea for the next Netflix or Google or Facebook or whatever. But you need to ensure that you have the same fighting chance as everyone else out there, that you don't have an unfair playing field that where the deck is stacked against you already unless you pay protection money to this company or that company. Net neutrality is important. It's the only thing preventing this scenario.
And another thing to remember was the process was really hampered by a lot of sort of random and fake comments to the FCC, and you know, this hasn't been a clean fight, and there's no sense that it's going to be any better in the future without people get galvanized around it.
We have some of those comments, but let's see if we can take a listener phone call first. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering if anybody could give a report back as to the net neutrality protest that happened on the 7th. And also what happened in Alabama. I'd love to hear from you guys.
Okay. Well, of course, Alabama they had an election yesterday and decided not to vote for a suspected child molester and went for the guy that prosecuted the KKK instead. So that's a good thing. As for the protest outside Verizon stores last week, did anybody go? None of us went? That's kind of sad. Okay.
That's our fault. That's our fault. But I did hear reports today about how many people were out, and it was something that did happen nationally in some of those locations. I know in major cities for sure. But if other people were there, please write us, OTH at 2600.com. We'd love to share and be able to let people know how that goes.
Use those words, sentences, paragraphs, the things we like to see, OTH at 2600.com. Our phone line is open right now, 347-335-0818. Is our call-in number. If you want to pledge, that number is 516-620-3602, and we certainly appreciate everybody who calls that number. And if you've learned something tonight, if you've gotten something out of this show, please call that number and pledge any amount, whether it's a one-time pledge or a monthly donation. It all adds up. Just like the people adding up to oppose net neutrality being killed, that makes a difference. That's why we're having this conversation right now. Just like that, your call adds to all the people who have called before you and have pledged for this place since 1960 to keep it going. You can add yourself to that as well. That's 516-620-3602 or the website give2wbai.org. And let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, it's Tom from the Bronx here.
Tom from the Bronx.
I'd like to say, if they choke the internet out off the city, where people can't get it, would that bring the newspapers back?
Oh, you know, it's an interesting thought there, Tom, but I don't think it's going to go that way. I think what you'll have instead is you'd have a monopoly of one company that provides you with the news as they see it, and anybody who had alternative thoughts, alternative ideas, they'd have to have pretty deep pockets, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to get the same kind of access.
Yeah.
There'd be like
that's really simple. Well, eventually they're trying to make things go that way. Let's face it.
Well, that's that people who are into monopolies and having the rich get all the power. Yeah, it's not hard to predict this will happen.
And if that continues, the Telegraph will make a big comeback, I guess.
Yeah, again, I don't think that's really where we're heading, but
the powers that be, the people interested in that steep barrier to entry, they're less interested in exactly how it occurs, as so long as it does occur, and it's important for us to make sure it does not.
Good hearing from you, Tom. Thanks for your call, and we might have time for one more, maybe. But I want to read some of these quotes that our Attorney General. Basically, A.G. Schneiderman, who is really heading up the opposition to this, was able to figure out that a lot of the comments posted in favor of net neutrality, in favor of killing net neutrality, that is, were fake and used real people's names to give forth opinions that were not theirs. This is actually, wait a minute, are these people?
And when you say in favor of it, in favor of the bill from, I believe, 2014, when we codified this, when we made a piece of legislation that protected the net as neutral.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood this. I thought I was reading comments that the fake people made. These are the real people who had comments made under their name. These are real comments from real people about fake comments from fake people using their name. In other words, this comment was made under my mom's name. She passed away several years ago from cancer. This is sickening. A person from Indiana said, this is a fake filing. This isn't the county that I served on active duty in the Marine Corps for nearly 4-5 years. Please do something about this. This is crazy. Said someone in Fremont, Ohio. Okay, so there are a lot of people very angry about this because their names were used.
That's not cool at all. No. I mean, I would be mad too. And so, yeah, check that.
Okay, so go ahead. You're on the air. You're our last call. Go ahead.
Yes. Now, this system of Bolshevik capitalism, Lilleman down the bottom always suffers. Not until there's a change in the method of which the society is being governed that we will get an equal share.
Well, that's going to take a while to change the entire system. And we do have to have these battles. We do have to have these fights to get victories along the way. But I do agree. I do agree that it's going to take a monumental change for the injustice not to be the default setting. And I do hope that we see that in some of our lifetimes anyway. But that's going to have to be the last word because we're out of time. Thank you for that call. Thank you, people who have called in to 516-620-3602 with your pledges. Thank you to people who are currently writing to us at oth@2600.com with your prose. Thanks to those of you who are tweeting at us, Hacker Radio Show on Twitter. And thanks to everybody who will listen again next week at this time. Well, next week, an hour before this time when we're signing on for another edition of Off the Hook. Until then, this is Emmanuel. Have a good night.
Staring at her brother so hard. Say you what?
If you wanna be my baby, got to tell me so. Oh, my confident lady, better act like you know. If you wanna be my baby, come on, take my hand. Tell me that you wanna get with pretty maid. See me up here dancing, dancing on the floor. Got you thinking about doing just a little more.
Ah, a little bit of Prince playing on this fabulous day. Hello, everyone. I am your host this hour, Christine Blasdale, and you're tuned in to another fantabulous Fun Drive program here on the Pacifica Radio Network. And I have in studio with me two really incredible human beings that are making marvelous contributions to this planet and to us human beings who are just walking around trying to get through it all. One in particular is to my left and a dear friend of Pacifica Radio and this radio station as well, we were kind of counting back and the many years that you've been here, Reno, and I'm estimating that it's well over $1 million.
Amazing.
You and Lynn, your wife, who is the other founder. Reno Rollet is in studio here, and he is the co-founder of Boku International. And through these amazing, life-saving, life-changing, organic superfood products, you and Lynn for your wonderful contributions to these fund drives has helped throughout the Pacifica network. I know it's been well over $1 million.
Which is almost hard to believe. What a incredible honor, and to make this positive difference. I can't tell you how grateful we are.
Well, and it shows, because your stuff is really good. And also joining us in studio is someone very, very special to you as well, Reno.
Indeed.
Right? Dr. Darren Clare.
My doctor,
yes.
Darren Clare. So,
so
many
he knows everything about you.
Doctor. Yeah. Yes, he does, actually.
Yes, but I do and, have to keep it to myself.
Yes, and Dr. Clare is an expert on anti-aging. He's been practicing medicine for well over 30 years in the Los Angeles area, and has helped, of course, many patients and many high-profile Hollywood celebrities as well, improving their health and vitality. And Dr. Clare also founded the Vibrance Medical Group back in 2003, and this is a center that's dedicated to enhancing health and vitality at every age. So it doesn't matter if you're in your 20s, in your 40s, in your 50s, in your 80s. He has been developing natural programs that supports the body's own healing systems. A doctor who believes in our body's way of helping to heal itself.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, let's face it. We've only begun to tap into the potential that we have, God gave us mm-hmm. to heal ourselves. And it's really fun and exciting to explore that, to learn more, and to share that with my patients and with your listeners.
And let's talk about, I mean, when I said anti-aging expert, that's something that is, I mean, I myself am in over, I'm actually going to be 53 in a couple weeks. And so it's something, of course, that's a great interest to me, just to feel better and to, of course, yeah, look better, but to feel better and to have the energy that I need to get me through my crazy days and to be with my family. Let's talk about your focus on anti-aging, on that realm of your practice with people.
Sure.
Let's talk about that a little bit. When did you start really getting into that?
Well, I actually started getting into that aspect of Vibrance back in 1998, where actually at the time, we do have a few minutes, so I'll
you go right
give you a little detail here. Forgive me, listeners, if this is not of interest. But anyway, I was working as an anesthesiologist at that point, and was on more than one occasion in a very short amount of time, I had a number of patients, as I was wheeling them into the operating room, look up on the gurney and say, Dr. Clare, you know, I've been reading about growth hormone. What do you think? Should I be doing it? And I'm going, what a bizarre question to ask
while you're on
right
the gurney.
Before you're being wheeled in to have surgery. And my first response was that, you know, I don't think so. It doesn't sound appropriate to me. But after a couple of people, and as I say, asked me this, I said, well, rather than talking through my hat, I decided maybe I should do a little research and actually be talking from a place of real expertise. I started doing research on growth hormone and became very convinced that for a lot of people, particularly over the age of 50, yes, indeed, they should be taking growth hormone.
I'm going to call you later, doctor.
So that you know, led me to be involved with this FDA-approved study on growth hormone as an anti-aging agent. And so I was treating patients with growth hormone and getting phenomenal results. And that sort of spiraled into Vibrance. You know, I had started out in family practice and wanted to do really preventive health because, you know, I mean, let's face it. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I mean, it is.
Yeah. Before you're on the gurney.
But before you're, exactly.
The stuff that you do before or to avoid that gurney.
Well, right. You bring up a very good point, because actually that was why I left anesthesia, is because I got sick and tired of, you know, taking care of these people who, if they had only taken better care of themselves, wouldn't be having the surgery in the first place.
Right.
It's just a crime. And for everything from heart disease to cancer to you name it, you know, lifestyle, nutrition plays a huge role, a much larger role than people appreciate, including doctors.
Right. There's my understanding is there's not a whole lot of training that medical physicians get in nutrition.
No, no. In fact, when I went to medical school way back in the dark ages.
Were leeches involved?
We got a 6-week course of nutrition, and it was like a couple hours a week.
And so it was based on the food pyramid, probably.
Yeah, that old food pyramid, which is...
Dairy is good, meat is good, bread is good. A couple, you could throw in a couple, you know, frozen vegetables here and there, but that's about it. Right.
Exactly.
So they're teaching you a model... That's
well. Even what they were teaching was not enough teaching, and it was wrong.
Right.
I find out these days they're actually teaching less nutrition than in my days. So it's even more pathetic now than it was then.
Wow.
But you know, doctors are and patients are both realizing. Look, you know, what we were promised is not working. You know, the promise of there's a drug for every ailment is just not true.
But, and people are, well, they're either not doing anything or doing the same thing that they have been doing based on that food pyramid, based on very little knowledge and ending up on the gurney, you know, with heart disease and high blood pressure and all that stuff, or they're making a change. And now my question is to you, when were you introduced, of course, to Reno Rollet, who is the co-founder of Boku International? When were you introduced to him and of course, this whole cadre of amazing superfoods that we have before us here in the studio? How long ago was that?
How long ago was it, Reno?
A few years now that
you've been
my doctor. But I think most recently we experienced, both of us, the sort of revelation, right? When when I came in for my for my heart exam.
This opened my eyes, okay, because, you know, I'm a big believer in eating quality, you know, food, excuse me, and that's, of course, what Boku is all about. And I also know from having read the research that, you know, heart disease is a choice, I'm not exaggerating, it is a choice. You can not only... prevent it, you can reverse it with diet. Okay. And I've been doing testing patients for heart disease. I have a wonderful program that I'm very proud of that can diagnose heart disease prior to any symptoms. Because, you know, first of all, over 50% of people in this country die of heart disease.
Mm. Wow.
More women than men die of heart disease.
Right. Wow.
And for of those people who die of heart disease, 1 out of 3 of them, the first time they find out that they have a problem is when they drop dead, okay? And that's not necessary.
So there's not a whole lot of warning signs that say, like, it's not like when you're in your car and your oil's low and you get a red light.
Exactly.
There's no red light that goes on and says, hey.
Nope.
Okay.
Exactly. And it's not necessary. You know, we now have the technology in my office and other places to diagnose the disease well before you have any symptoms. It's not just about cholesterol and whatnot, but the testing is available. So it's really not necessary. And I was actually on the doctor's show showing this technology a few years ago. Well, nonetheless, Reno being my patient, everybody over the age of 50, because of these statistics we were just talking about, gets this heart panel of heart tests. And so Reno had this panel. And, you know, I mean, Reno basically, he eats generally well. He does eat, you know, does take his Boku every day. He exercises fairly regularly and does, you know,
he's a normal guy. I know because I hang out with him once in a while, and I know he you like a delicious glass of wine once in a while.
Yeah,
I like a good steak once in a while.
You eat meat?
I'll eat bacon and eggs. Actually, I've never abstained from anything. I've never dieted in my life.
No.
And I have a family of heart disease.
Right.
A history of heart disease. I lost my father last year.
Right.
I lost my brother last year. Both suffered terrible heart disease, right? So going into this test I was really nervous. I mean, I just assumed I had some, you know, predisposed condition, right? That I had this sort of death sentence, frankly. So I was actually really, really nervous about the test.
And so what happened? What happened with the test?
Well, let me say, first of all, that I have taken the test myself and I scored pretty well. But, you know, I do really take my health seriously. You know, I exercise regularly. I really do eat very cleanly, you know, try and get enough sleep and do all those sorts of things. But I still had some buildup, some early heart disease. Anyway, so Reno has the test, and the results came back. You know, I figured, well, you know, he's not going to be as good as me. You know, he's going to have some disease, but hopefully it won't be severe, and I'll help him reverse it. Anyway, he came back with perfectly clean arteries. I mean, no trace of any heart disease. And the only thing I can attribute it to is the fact that, you know, he's been taking the Boku much longer than I have.
Yeah.
So it made a believer of me. I'm taking it every day now without fail, and I'm telling all of my patients.
Are you telling your patients? You're telling your patients about the Boku superfoods?
Absolutely. Nice. Absolutely.
And part of it, don't you think, I mean, let's put it this way, too, because you're a doctor. So, you know, you can tell your patients, look, we want to help you reverse this heart disease. So here are some things that you need to do. And there's some things that people will go, oh, my goodness. Okay, in order to do that, I got to rearrange my whole life. Or if it takes a lot of effort,
right,
people are not going to do it. And it's not a thing of because they're mad at you, doctor, and they're like, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. It's life.
Yeah.
It's life. We're busy. We have kids. We have jobs. We have traffic. We have stuff that comes up. So for me, what I and I know for our listeners, for many years now, one reason why we've been able to raise so much money for the network and for this radio station is because how easy it is